Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal, Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we bring you exciting new guests to talk about all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff that's going on in this huge universe of ours. I hope you enjoyed our show last week when we had UFO investigator, pioneering UFO investigator, Stanton Friedman, who's pretty darn well known in this field. He's been on Larry King Live. He's been doing this for, 50 years or something like that. Written several books. He didn't get a chance to catch the show. The shows are archived on the BBS website. So check it out if you want. And it was a very interesting show. Lots of interesting Roswell updates. He talked about his new book, Flying Saucers and Science. And like my guest tonight, he's an upcoming speaker at the UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada. And tonight we are going to be speaking about UFOs again. This is my favorite subject. I've been investigating it since 1988, and I think it's a very, very important subject, vastly underestimated by a lot of people, and has the potential to really change our society in a lot of ways, and is actually doing that. I think it's very pervasive in an invisible, almost invisible kind of way. And our guest tonight, he's well aware of this. He's also a UFO researcher. He's been doing this for quite some time. His name is Jeff Peckman. That's P-E-C-K-M-A-N. And tonight, we're going to be talking actually about exopolitics, which is sort of like, we'll ask our guest to give us a definition. And our guest, his name is Jeff Peckman again, and he is the director of the Extra Campaign Ballot Initiative to create an Extraterrestrial Affairs Commission in Denver, Colorado. Now, that sounds interesting. He's currently on the board of directors for the Exopolitics Institute and on the advisory board of the Institute for the Study of Galactic Civilizations. This is serious stuff. Jeff also writes a top-ranked column for Examiner.com as the Denver UFO Examiner and has also proposed a White House Extraterrestrial Affairs Commission, which you know is going to happen sooner or later if there isn't already one unofficially. And several of his innovative ballot initiatives have actually attracted national and international media attention. And besides his grassroots strategies for getting this kind of information to the public, Jeff also promotes Metatron technology, which we'll hopefully be talking a little bit about that as well. But Jeff, I want to thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
So you're speaking at the upcoming Congress, is that right?
Yes, that's right. That'll be my first UFO Congress.
And what date is that?
The whole Congress is from the 22nd to the 28th, but I speak on the 25th, Wednesday morning.
Okay, pretty exciting. Well, I expect it'll attract a lot of people because this subject is just getting more and more popular.
I agree. I've heard that Sun newspaper is going to be there from England, and I'm sure others.
Oh, wow. So, exopolitics, what exactly is that, and how did you get involved in this kind of a offbeat subject?
Well, my expertise is really in the area of the ballot initiative that is attempting to bring this information to the general public. I'm probably the least knowledgeable in terms of the nuts and bolts of UFO research and ufology, but because I've become a spokesperson through this ballot initiative, you know, it's natural for a lot of people to assume that I've been doing this a long time. But in fact, I'm fairly new to that. But the exopolitics field is really the knowledge of everything that's going on outside of our planet in terms of civilizations, administration of other societies, their culture, education, technology, anything that has to do with that. So even though the word politics is in the word, it's really much more broad than that.
Right. Well, it's pretty interesting that it's a buzzword that's attracting a lot of attention right now. There's a whole movement, as I'm sure you know, And you're exactly the kind of person I think our field needs, you know, someone who can take this subject and treat it seriously. So you started a ballot initiative. What is that all about? I mean, I'm not even sure I have any idea how that
works. Yeah, ballot initiatives, you know, they really have their roots in, you know, going way back in American history, and I think maybe actually started in Switzerland in the 1400s, as a way for the citizens to petition to put a law onto a ballot for a vote. And the Western U.S. has this much more than the Eastern U.S. I think over time, as you know, America expanded west, there was seen to be a need to be free from the grip of politics in the daily affairs of the citizens. And so most of the states in the West have it at a state level. There's 10,000 cities and counties and small towns and larger cities that have it throughout the United States. And it's a matter of, you know, when the legislators, the city council members, are ignoring an issue, then the citizens have a right to, and this is in the First Amendment, to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And that really translates into a process which is different everywhere you go, but a process where a citizen or a small group of citizens can propose a law, an ordinance, or a statute at a state level, collect the signatures, some amount of signatures to put it on the ballot, and then try to encourage the people to vote for it and pass it as a law, thereby bypassing the city council and the legislators, but it still has the same force and effect as a law passed by, elected public officials.
Right. So this is really one of our most powerful tools. I mean, we the public.
Absolutely. It's the power of the people. And, you know, James Madison said that the people are the only legitimate fountain of power. And it's from that all the other powers of government are derived. So, yeah, the power of the people, it's a direct democracy, it's also called.
All right. So how did you, what inspired you to create this initiative to create an extraterrestrial affairs commission? And what exactly is this EAC, the Extraterrestrial Affairs Commission?
Right. There were two things. About a year and a half ago, I was introduced, I actually met the director of the Paranormal Research Forum in the Denver area, and he holds the largest monthly meetings on paranormal subjects, UFO topics and related things, I think in the whole country. Very, very intelligent, very well-known community leader, and he invited me to hear a talk by Stan Romanek, who has had a lot of contact experiences with the UFOs and extraterrestrial beings, and he's quite well known now. And so what I saw, though, was that, you know, it was convincing, his case, and I thought a lot of people should know about this. It would be important. But the media was not paying attention, even then when they were invited to see the video footage of this, you know, alien popping up and down outside Stan's window in Nebraska. They just didn't show up or didn't really report on it. And then I heard John Schussler, who was, I think, one of the co-founders of MUFON, very distinguished gentleman who had been a former NASA engineer. He gave a talk about the other side of it, the government cover-up, and he had a stock of declassified documents and a lot of first-hand knowledge of, you know, different things going on that basically, as far as I could tell, proved that the government had been covering up this information for many decades.
Right.
And so I thought, you know, okay, well, the media really needs to know about this. The people need to know about this. But at the end of his talk, he said, you know, I don't expect the government to release this information, certainly not in my lifetime. And at that point, a light just went on inside. I said, well, wait a minute. Don't forget that, you know, we are the government. You know, the people in this room are as much the government as anybody we elect, more so, actually. And secondly, I know how, and Stan had enough evidence in the private sector that we don't need the government, we don't need Congress, we don't need White House, really, to get this information to the people. There's enough known amongst ourselves to get it to the people, and through a ballot initiative, we can get it directly to the public in a way that they will pay attention and they will deliberate in a very thoughtful way on the nature of the issue, on the requirements of the commission that is being proposed, and in that role, they will be the lawmakers. And that's where it started. By the time I got home from John Schussler's lecture, within 30 minutes, I had already figured out the concept for for the ballot initiative and got to work right on it, drafting it, looking into other statute or other local ordinances that had created commissions, and basically took a model and worked with that, revised it, and created the ballot initiative. And basically what it does is it would establish a commission, an official body as a commission within the city of Denver, and the primary purpose is to gather the best available credible evidence about extraterrestrial visitations and interactions with human beings, and share that with the public and make sure that the relevant city departments are up to speed on this topic in case they have to deal with these issues. And then just to educate the public about, you know, what is known about these extraterrestrial civilizations and their interactions, and to assess the risks and benefits of interacting with these extraterrestrial intelligent beings, and just kind of going from there. That's the gist of it.
Wow, that's a fantastic idea, and it's exactly like I was saying earlier, what this field needs. So all we would need is enough people to vote for it, and we can create this thing and fund it through state money or government money?
No. I was very careful to ensure that this commission would be funded entirely by grants, gifts, and donations, and would not draw upon any existing taxpayer resources. That's very specific in the ballot initiative. And then there would be, you know, a board of 7 people who would be very competent, knowledgeable about this topic, with PhDs or having interviewed 100 people with contact experiences or written books on the subject. So the first version was not that stringent, and I changed it to make it more stringent so that the people of Denver would basically get more out of this commission than otherwise. And but right now, you see, it's on hold. After I rewrote it, changed it, we had to start over back in the fall. And then at that point, I was informed by the city attorney that this ballot initiative, if it went on the May election of this year, it might be the only reason for the city to have election. And it would cost about $500,000. So I gave the city council a month to pass it themselves. They have that authority, and they basically just ignored it. And after that month passed, we were within just a couple weeks of the presidential election, and there were indications that people were that Obama was going to win the election, and that there were people in his small group that had been very favorable in the past, John Podesta, Hillary Clinton, very favorable in the past to releasing this information about the UFOs and what the government knows. So I just kind of sat on it for a couple weeks just to see if Obama would win. And after he won, I immediately thought, okay, it looks like this really can happen at the national level through the White House administration. So I'm just going to table this thing, put it on the back burner for a few months, and just see what indications are coming out of the Obama administration. And so far, you know, it's very encouraging that he's going to relax the Freedom of Information Act regulations that have been restrictive, very restrictive for the recent years, and also be more promoting more openness and transparency in government. So at this point, it's just on hold, and in the meantime, I'm doing other strategies, writing this column as the Denver UFO Examiner, still trying to keep some momentum of public awareness about this. I'm just going to see what happens, Maybe March or April I'll reconsider doing the ballot initiative if it seems necessary.
All right. Well, this is a unique thing. I can't think of anyone who's ever done this sort of thing before, created a ballot.
Yeah, I think not on this topic, although there was some attempt in Missouri and I think Virginia at the state level, and the requirements were different. It would not have resulted in the same thing. I think both of them were mostly a statement from the state level to encourage the federal level to do something. That you can also do that. It's a slightly different type of ballot initiative. It's more of an indirect approach. This one, by law cannot require anyone outside the city of Denver to do anything. And it would really just set up this commission, which would be, which would invite people to join the commission, to apply to be on it if they meet the qualifications, and then they can make certain rules and, go on from there. But, Larry Bryant, brilliant man out in Virginia, very well versed in that. You might have known of him. He writes for UFO Magazine. And but that's it. Nothing certainly at the city level that I've heard of.
Right. Well, it's pretty exciting stuff. Exactly what the city needs. I mean, it surprises me. I think there's enough evidence out there to convince, you know, a reasonable person that UFOs are real in the public arena, and yet we still have, you know, a good 50% of the people, maybe a little less, who are skeptical, and a small portion who are profoundly skeptical of this subject. And getting people to take it seriously seems to be a big stumbling block right now, and I think this commission is a perfect thing to sort of get people to sort of take this subject a little more seriously and bring it to attention.
You're totally right on that, Preston, and the reason is because, again, you're engaging the power of the people in a way that matters. It's one thing just to share information through the newspapers and television, but, you know, it can just go right past them. They're not required to make any decision about it. When they vote, and people do, you know, they hold that right very high, the right to vote, and they honor that. And so when you put something before them as something that they should vote on, they really do take it very seriously. And I've been through this a couple times with other ballot initiatives for other topics, and each time it got just a tremendous amount of publicity. And not just that, that's the more superficial thing, but it really became the topic of conversation, you know, in the office and at the dinner table, in classrooms around the country would take this on as a mock election as part of their study of politics, of social studies, of elections, and they would debate, they would divide up into groups. This is just a very common thing with ballot initiatives and elections, and especially one that's an unusual ballot initiative. And the students at various ages would become really expert in the knowledge. I mean, it would be their homework, and they'd have to write reports and give speeches and debate one side or the other, for or against a particular issue. And so when that happens, you can see how that knowledge would really take hold in the awareness of these students, and whether they're for it or against it, they would study it. And the people that vote, you know, they'll read through the entire text and they'll really think about it. And, you know, there's certainly the population will just dismiss it and vote no as a sort of default because they don't want to take time to get into the issue. But it's when they are put in the role of becoming a lawmaker, it's like a juror. In a way, it's like putting this, you know, having this case in front in the court of public opinion, and you've got people arguing both sides, and then the voters really are the jurors. And, you know, jurors can be, even though they're just kind of average people like us, they can just be very, very smart, and they take their responsibilities seriously, and they rise to the occasion, and they just think from a different level. So that's the exciting part. It's a way to get the information to the people in a way that they are paying attention and will make a conscious decision about it.
Right. I think a great way to interest students in government, too, because the subject of UFOs is almost, intrinsically interesting, at least to me, it is. And I think it's a good way to interest students and hopefully get colleges to start teaching courses in this, which there has been a movement towards that as well. But now, your column, this is pretty interesting. How did you start writing this column, and what has that experience been like? And tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I just saw a job offer on Craigslist, and I recognized this examiner.com because another, you know, it's sort of, if you have a passion, you like to write, and you just like to be part of something as a news outlet, then, you know, the examiner.com owner is Philip Anschutz. He's a billionaire in Denver, and this was started in Denver just last April. And he's trying to gather 12,000 people who are examiners. And it seems to be a cross between writing a column and writing news. And so there's in Denver, there's over 170 of these examiners. You know, your pet examiner, your Broncos examiner, weather examiner, you know, every kind of thing. Wow. And so I applied. I thought, well, you know, I'll try to do this. And I applied just thinking I wanted to do something while the ballot initiative was on hold. And it turned out to be a lot of fun. And I get, you know, I research articles, and, you know, some take on the appearance more of just an opinion, a column, that sort of thing, and a mix of the news. And I bring different resources into it. And then there's a way for people to comment, and I try to keep that, you know, informative and not just people bashing each other, which certainly does happen, has happened. Yeah. But, and I only started December 11th. And, after I started, and almost all of my 17 articles that I've written since December 11th have ranked number one in a Google News search in relevance as soon as they were put up. And that's usually out of 3,000 to 7,000 articles on the UFO topic on any given day. So I was very encouraged by that, and so I invited some other people to do it as well. And so Dr. Michael Sala is now the Honolulu Exopolitics Examiner. Alfred Weber is the Seattle Exopolitics Examiner. There's another young man here that became the Denver Progressive Examiner. And he's doing well so far. So it's great. Right now my column, so it ranked high on Google News search, but also in terms of just the, excuse me, the Denver Examiners, 180. Sorry. It's ranked number one for this week, this month, and for the year to date, out of 180 examiners.
Well,
so, yeah, it's doing great.
Exciting.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's great. And, wow, so people are really interested in this stuff, then. I think they really are. I think there is, like I was saying earlier in the introduction, that this field is pretty volatile. And I think that there's a pretty strong possibility that, I mean, the government cover-up is demonstrable. If you do the research into this, it's pretty darn clear that our government is, in fact, covering up UFO information. You can demonstrate it through documents released through the Freedom of Information Act and through, you know, many other ways. So,
Yeah, and think about it, Preston. I mean, how many other topics have people wanted to know about for so long but have been denied information?
Exactly. And it still remains popular. I mean, there's this kind of weird push-pull in the media. On one hand, they're covering it up, and there is, you know, Terry Hansen wrote a book. I don't know if you know this book. It's called The Missing Times.
Yes, I've included it in a number of my articles.
So you do. Well, there you go. So you do know that this, you know, the media cover-up is, in fact, there. And yet, on the other hand, it's UFOs are news. They remain news at least every other year or so. There's a UFO story that hits the airwaves that's just of such a magnitude that it goes national and international. Like I'm sure you might recall the UFO over O'Hara Airport recently.
Yes.
Or, of course, there was a wave of sightings over Texas as well. So my point is this phenomena is not going to go away, and our government is continuing even now to cover it up and treat it, I think, you know, badly. And so, and the UFO movement is towards ending this cover-up, and I'm wondering, you know, what do you think are the chances that this cover-up will eventually end? I mean, that's what a large portion of the energies you're putting forth is working towards, right?
Right, and I think that the cover-up itself will be increasingly less significant, because a lot of the information is going to seep into the public through other ways. I'm not convinced that any White House administration is just going to come out with a big announcement saying, okay, we've been lying to you for 60 years. Yes, there are extraterrestrial intelligent beings that have been visiting us. A lot of them are here. Deal with it. You know, I don't really think that'll happen.
They need a strong reason to do so. You know, someone has to push them for some reason. They need, you know, a motivator.
Yes, I do.
Close?
Yeah, I do, and I think that the motivation for the Obama administration will be when this reaches and looks like it's starting to reach a critical mass, and the people have really taken it upon themselves to disclose the available information to themselves and sort of leave the politicians out of the loop. I think that's when President Obama will be very determined to be part of the process, because he's very big on community organizing, grassroots efforts. I mean, that's how he got elected. And I think he will need to see that that momentum is coming from the side of the public. I don't think he's going to take the lead and do it for us, and I don't think that he should do it for us. It's a very personal decision that one makes when they acknowledge the existence of, you know, people in another country or another religion or another galactic civilization. And so I really do think that it has to happen at the grassroots level, and then his administration will come in to try to help guide it so that it's not just a total free-for-all and creates more problems than it solves. You know, that's my take on it.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think it's inevitable. It's going to happen sooner or later, because if the government wants to remain in power, they're going to have to handle the subject differently than they're doing it now. Because someone else is going to get the proof out there. And like I said, I think there's enough evidence already within the public arena. It's just a matter of gathering it. And hopefully, you know, this commission that you're putting forth, that would be the perfect, you know, tool to do something like this. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and tonight our guest is Jeff Peckman, and we're talking about exopolitics. Jeff Peckman is the director of the Extra Campaign Ballot Initiative to create an extraterrestrial affairs commission in Denver, Colorado. There is a website for this. It's www.extracampaign.org. That's all one word, extracampaign.org. Jeff is currently on the board of directors for the Exopolitics Institute and on the advisory board of the Institute for the Study of Galactic Civilizations. And we also are talking about his top-ranked column for Examiner.com as the Denver UFO Examiner. So this is pretty interesting stuff. So, what, you know, back to your column, what were some of the interesting columns that you've wrote, you know, some of the interesting articles that, you know, have interested you or got a lot of hits?
I think the ones about the whistleblowers and NASA and Gary McKinnon, that was all one article, just indicating that the testimony by all these witnesses, whistleblowers that had direct interaction with NASA, indicates that NASA has been doctoring photos over the years that have had images of UFOs in them. And yet at the same time, NASA has been asking for billions and getting about $17 billion a year to keep looking for intelligent life in outer space, all right? And yet, when they find it, then they erase the image, and then they come back and they ask for more money. Now, to me, and I think to a lot of other people, that would just be called fraud. I mean, it reminds you of Enron and other things.
All right,
so there's that, and so I think that should work in Gary McKinnon's favor, the UK hacker who hacked into NASA files and found references and information about UFOs and possibly, you know, non-terrestrial officers. That's sort of fascinating. The other one that was, I think, really great was certainly fascinating for me was to see the what amounted to deathbed confessions. Maybe that's too dramatic, but from Ben Rich, who was the former CEO of Lockheed Skunk Works, who does, you know, that's the division that does the black ops, the covert projects for Lockheed. And he was exchanging some emails or some written letters with, I think it was John Andrews of Tester Corporation. Think of all the people that have made tester models with the tester glue and little plastic pieces, and you put together cars and spaceships and planes and all that stuff. Okay. And they were acknowledging that, yes, in fact, there are two types of UFOs, and they were agreeing with each other that there are the UFOs that we humans make, and there are UFOs that they make, and that in fact some of the secret fighter planes, top secret fighter planes and spy planes that American industries, aerospace industries have made, Lockheed and McDonnell Douglas, they actually drew some design characteristics from the extraterrestrial craft that crashed in Roswell back in 47.
Wow.
And, you know, and so this is kind of fascinating. So I was able to post the, or at least link to the PDF file of the handwritten letters, by John Andrews and, Ben Rich. And to me, you know, that's a pretty obvious thing, you know, when the top people are acknowledging this and corroborating the witness testimony from the whistleblowers, it doesn't look good for NASA, I think. Personally, I would double NASA's budget if they would just release the information they have, if they have clean energy technologies from extraterrestrial craft or photos or whatever, and then I'd cut it in half if they didn't. So those were two, and there's going to be another one upcoming about the whole Renaissance, you know, the Renaissance art with the UFOs, because, you know, a lot of people, Columbus, Da Vinci, Michelangelo, they were all around at that time when UFOs were being painted into Renaissance art.
Right.
And that was happening in Florence, and they were in Florence, and Florence was the capital city of Italy. So, you know, there had to be, I mean, I'm suspecting that there was a lot of interaction, at least some interaction between these individuals, their art, and Columbus, you might have heard this story, had seen something that, you know, it was described in his journal as sounding like another UFO, flying saucer zipping around, or ball of light that he couldn't understand. So,
right.
To me, that's interesting that it's gone on, you know, at a time when there were not secret, top secret aircraft, there were no weather balloons, there weren't any other excuses. So that's going to be coming up, I think, by tomorrow night. I'll have it posted.
Wow. It's so interesting, you know, how many different avenues there are to bring this to this subject. And there's the historical part, of course. There's the whole government cover-up, which I think is truly one of the most cutting-edge parts of this field right now, or the most volatile, and where we can get a lot of progress made. And you know, the study of abductions is, of course, I think, pretty important, because the aliens themselves could end this cover-up overnight. Clearly, they're a part of it as well. I mean, they're very evasive and are hiding themselves from us for whatever reason. So it's a volatile situation. I'm really interested to see, you know, what the future brings from all this. Now, this you're a part of this Exopolitics Institute. Have you heard of Stephen Greer? I'm sure you must have.
Yes, and I spent a day with him when he was here last July. Did a presentation, standing room only, packed room, 400 people, and then. Spent some time, so yeah, I'm very familiar with that.
So yeah, he's one of the guys I think who's doing really, you know, important work in this field. He's the guy who brought together all these people who were high level people, you know, within the military and corporations, who want to come forward with this stuff, but they're under security oaths. And it's interesting, you spoke of NASA. Now, I totally believe NASA is covering up, because I spoke with this guy claimed to be part of the Apollo team. He's a photographer, and that was his job. He was on one of the ships that picked up the astronauts, and it was his job to develop the film that was taken there. He says there was rooms and rooms and rooms of it. It would take him a lifetime to do it. He could only develop a portion of it. But he said a lot of the film that he developed showed UFOs and all sorts of very weird things. He says the astronauts were followed to and from the moon, and that there were UFOs on the moon. So, you know, when he told me this, I had been a UFO researcher for quite a while, but hadn't really looked into the moon and all that controversy. And so I started investigating and was pretty shocked to find out that, you know, what I found backed up what he was saying. So I do think NASA has got a lot of answering to do.
And, yeah, it's true. And that was one of the people in this whistleblower article that I wrote. Carl Wolf, he had reported that some of the pictures he saw were about, you know, structures on the moon, and that the photos were being destroyed, in that case, I think, or maybe altered, but I think in his story they were actually being destroyed. Yeah, it's interesting when it'll come out.
So do you have any restrictions on what you can write in terms of UFOs and for your column?
No, it doesn't get edited so far. I mean, they have certain rules about not, you know, slandering people and pornography. I mean, just very basic things to maintain the integrity of the website. And but no, I can you know, write. I posted some photos from the Billy Meyer case just because I thought it was important. You know, as this disclosure unfolds, people in the public are going to come across all of this stuff anyway, and so I think it's useful to just get it out there again, even if it's been reviewed. And you know, some people think it's been debunked, others think it hasn't. Some people think part of it's true, another part's not true. And there's controversy about that story, and there's controversy about a lot of stories where, if it's been really significant, then you can be sure that it's probably also been contaminated somewhat, just to allow people to dismiss the whole thing by focusing on, you know, one element that, you know, might be not convincing. Same thing with Stan Romanek's case. So I think just important to get it out on the table, into the light, and under this new atmosphere of openness and transparency in government, just, you know, see what the result is.
All right. Well, it's great, and I'm really glad you're doing this work. You know, I'm a subscriber to the UFO News Clipping Service, and have been for many years, which basically just takes all the newspapers around the country and the world, for that matter, and any article about UFOs they include, and they got it from readers and from, you know, from themselves, and it used to number about 40, 50 pages. It's been going steadily down, 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 and I was pretty concerned for a while there, thinking that there was not media attention, but I think now what's happening is it's just going online and onto the computer, which is a much faster way for people to get information anyway.
So. Right. Well, yeah, Google News search is a really great way to keep on top of that, both just to see what is being ranked high in terms of relevance, but also just seeing, you know, day-to-day in terms of chronological order, what new articles are being picked up.
Right. Well, you know, I'm kind of not surprised that your article, your column is doing that well, because I've heard of several studies on UFOs and how popular they are on the web, and they're very popular, and then they're the second most popular subject on the web. This is what I've heard. I can't prove it, but next to sex. But
right.
After sex, it's UFOs. So.
Right. Well, my column ranks in Denver. It ranks higher than the Denver Sex Examiner as well.
Ah, there you go.
So we're making progress.
Well, look at that. Isn't that interesting?
And the Denver Beer Examiner. So you know that there's something different is happening. And it's not just my column. There's different categories of examiner columns. There's technology and politics and probably sports and fat, you know, food and all that sort of stuff, just basic things. And Michael Sala's column is ranking, I think, number one in the politics category. And now, nationally, of all the national, you know, 80-some people in the country that write examiner columns for politics, his ranks number one there, I think, still as of this moment. And Alfred Weber has moved up to number five with his politics, exopolitics column in the politics category. And mine's number one in the technology category. So you see, this is, you know, like each person that becomes a UFO examiner or exopolitics examiner, if they're doing, you know, a good job, getting, you know, they're dedicated to it, then it ranks very high. But even one young man who's, must be in his early 20s, he just posted his first article, and it's really just a very short thing, very short and simple, and immediately his article went to the top of the Google ranking out of 6,500 articles posted, and it stayed there for, you know, about 17 hours, which is kind of a long time, and now it just moved down slightly. But, you know, it is a very, very popular topic. People want to know.
All right. Well, I think that we're going to be seeing a lot of changes in the future. I really do. And hopefully, like you say, Obama, there certainly is a lot of buzz about this on the Internet, will disclose information. I mean, it was really interesting during the campaign when a reporter asked Denis Kucinich if he had seen a UFO, and he admitted that he had, over Shirley MacLaine's house, I believe in Santa Fe, New Mexico. But President Clinton has made remarks on UFOs. I know Reagan has. They're aware of it, of the subject, and I think there's going to be a lot more movement towards this being taken seriously. And you're right on the forefront of it, so it's great to see.
Yes, and you mentioned Obama again. You know, one of my recent articles about that was that he probably could get a better briefing on this topic just by going on the Internet through his now famous BlackBerry than from, you know, a lot of the people in the intelligence agencies that he, you know, relies on for other things. So, you know, I don't expect him to actually do that, but he certainly could. And he'd find out from the Disclosure Project, the whistleblower testimony. He'd find out a lot about NASA and, you know, what the CIA has been involved in with this. And there's a lot on the Internet.
Well, I certainly hope he does take some action, because, I mean, when I got involved in this field, you know, some 20 years ago, there was buzz then that the government was going to disclose, and there have been steps, slow baby steps, in that direction, and other governments, I think, are doing a lot more in that regard, such as England, and I heard Denmark recently did a big disclosure, and France, and Mexican Air Force disclosed a really remarkable film, an infrared film showing apparent UFOs. But I think, you know, it could happen very quickly. If a UFO just showed up over New York and didn't go away for a couple of days, or L.A., and I think that's probably how this is going to go down. That's my best guess, because I just can't imagine that this cover-up is going to remain viable much longer. You mentioned deathbed confessions. That's a big thing in the UFO field and not that uncommon. There's a bunch of Roswell witnesses who did exactly that. And just most recent, I think, was Walter Haut, who was the guy who wrote the press release, you know, which went out to the world announcing this crash. He didn't reveal that he had actually seen the bodies until he was on his deathbed. And another one that comes to mind is Major Mansman. He was a guy who oversaw a Vandenberg missile launch. And this missile was filmed with a UFO going around it, shooting beams of light at it. And he didn't talk about this until he was on his deathbed. And so there's a lot of cases like that. And I think what's going down now is, you know, from the Roswell era, we're having a lot of people who are deciding to come forth. Sort of the old school is dying out, and the younger people are moving in. And the information is coming out real fast now. And there is a cover-up, but it's a disastrous failure, clearly. And that's why I think that this area that you're working in is what's sorely needed in this field. We've got a lot of people who are interested in the subject, but not enough people with, you know, the professional abilities to make it be taken seriously.
Right, and you know, that's very true. What you're doing is extremely important, just keeping the airwaves and the Internet open with these interviews. And primary reason besides to do this ballot initiative, besides trying to, you know, inform the public about Stan's evidence and John Schussler's evidence, was really just to create an opportunity for everybody who had, whether it's books or DVDs, or they could come and do lectures and just kind of flood to Denver and really get the information out there and demonstrate just how much is known about this topic, not just the UFOs, but whether they're flying saucers or rods or cones or, you know, whatever, but the intelligent, the extraterrestrial intelligent beings that have been visiting and where they're from and what they want, and, you know, just to kind of saturate one major city with that information and see what happens from that.
Right. So So were you skeptical of UFOs, you know, before you got into this whole thing, or has this changed your life to any great degree?
Well, it just never crossed my mind. I wasn't interested in the topic, really. I've been a teacher of meditation, and I'm very oriented towards solutions to major problems in the world, and so that's where all my attention was. And I really didn't make any connection, between solutions that are needed for our planet and people from other places in the universe. You know, no, I just didn't have much of an occasion to be around the discussion of that, and I just didn't really have much interest in reading the books. And so now I see that, yeah, there are the potential solutions that can be shared with our planet from these other civilizations. But, you know, I just really didn't think about it much, and it was really just a, you know, I just happened to run into this person at a print shop that invited me to Stan Romanek's lecture. And then I took interest, and I started seeing the value in helping people to become informed. Informed citizens are just very important, and they need to be informed about a lot of things. And so that's when I jumped in. So essentially my desire has been satisfied in terms of bringing attention to this issue through this ballot initiative, even before it ever got on the ballot. And maybe it never will. Maybe it'll never be needed. But, but then that developed into other things, and I learned more, and I thought, okay, I now can see the connection. You know, we need to acknowledge that we're not the only ones in the universe, as Franklin Roosevelt already did in a memorandum he issued. You know, now I'm more interested. It's not necessarily my highest priority to try to convince people of the existence of, extraterrestrial cultures and civilizations. But it's high. It's just not necessarily the highest. So I try to integrate it with other things that I'm doing, clean energy technologies and other things like that.
Right. Well, you know, you mentioned clean energy technologies, and that's exactly why I think this subject is so important in ending this cover-up, because I think we could kill like 9 birds with one stone if we would end this cover-up. We could solve our energy problem, because clearly we have technology of these UFOs, and it would end the financial crisis. It would stop the whole global warming problem, because we wouldn't have to burn all these fossil fuels. So it's so important. I don't think people realize how important ending this cover-up really is, and what a profound effect it will have on society. I think it's going to hit us like a ton of bricks, and that's why it's being taken kind of step by step, sort of lessen the impact of it, the traumatic impact.
Yeah, you're right, and I think it's important for the UFO researchers and advocates of disclosure to bring home to the people, in terms that they can understand, how the lack of disclosure is really impacting their day-to-day life. Their budgets, their jobs are going away. Their budgets in their government and their organizations are shrinking. You know, yeah. We're dependent on foreign energy sources. And so, you know, that's what I try to do, and I'll keep trying to do, is to just let people know that this affects you every day. This is not something that's on the fringe. This is impacting your life. You just haven't realized it yet.
Exactly. That's exactly what I think people don't realize. Well, Jeff, we're nearing the end of our hour. It's been amazing. I'm so glad you're doing this work. You've got a lot of really amazing information to share, and I'm so glad you came onto the show. It's been really interesting. Now, you have a website. Would you like to give out your website and any other information that people might be able to use to get more information about this?
Yes, I would say the website is that extracampaign.org, extracampaign.org, and that's a normal spelling, E-X-T-R-A, campaign.org. And from there on the homepage, you can find out about the different, at least a couple different examiner columns. You can find out how to apply for a job for the proposed White House Extraterrestrial Affairs Commission, which I just, I proposed when I applied for a job with the Obama administration, and just said, you know, you should have this commission. I applied to be part of it. And they can find out about the Metatron technology, and there's other links to resources for There's one project called the One World Heart Project. You can find out how to feed a kid for 25 cents a day. You know, so I like to promote different things that are all interrelated. And so that would be the main site. From there, you can get to the Examiner columns, you can get to the Metatron technology, you can get to other resources on this whole topic of UFOs and extraterrestrial visitations.
Great, great. Well, you're making it easy for people to themselves make a difference and, you know, help end this cover-up, which, like I said, it's going to happen. I really do think it's inevitable. And
I agree. Hopefully
we see it soon. Well, Jeff, thank you again for coming on to the show. It's been great, and just want to thank you so much.
Thank you, Preston. It's been wonderful to spend an hour with you, and I appreciate the people listening in.
All right. Well, everyone, that is our show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Jeff Peckman, P-E-C-K-M-A-N, and we've been talking about exopolitics and his campaign to create an extraterrestrial affairs commission in Denver, Colorado. We've been talking also about his top-ranked column and lots of other interesting stuff like the UFO cover-up and when will it ever end and what can we do to end it. So it's been very interesting. I hope you've all enjoyed it as much as I have, and thank you all for listening. I hope you can join us next week when I bring on another exciting guest to talk about UFOs and the paranormal. Until then, have a wonderful night and a great week. Bye now.